This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. How can you have fun while helping to save the planet? This week on the Compass, we talk with retired glaciologist and erstwhile game master Bob Binchadler about sustainability organization Local 2020's decision to sponsor another bracing round of the Taming Bigfoot contest, a friendly competition among teams of like-minded individuals to measure and then reduce their personal carbon footprints that originally took place in eastern Jefferson County in early 2016. So now, let's go inside the Compass. And why don't you just tell me what the Taming Bigfoot contest is and what its goal is?
Taming Bigfoot was an activity, or is an activity, it's still active, that we created in the Climate Action Outreach Group. And it followed on from having provided lectures on climate change and then reasons for hope, things that were happening across the world that were helping to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions. But we realized that our audience here in Jefferson County was really asking the question, okay, well, what can I do? And how do I know that doing those things would actually help? So we created something called Taming Bigfoot, which is a carbon footprint reduction competition designed to help people learn what their carbon footprint is, what makes up their carbon footprint, what are the different pieces of it, and to encourage them to seek ways to reduce the carbon footprint by allowing them to see what those different parts are, measuring them, quantifying them. Then they can make their own decisions about what steps to take to reduce that carbon footprint. So as much as anything, it's an education program. But we wanted to introduce a lot of fun and enjoyable activities as part of it. So we gave it a humorous name, Taming Bigfoot, something quite appropriate to the Northwest. And we organized people in teams, so they didn't have to feel like it was them against the world. And they actually had teammates that they would work with to reduce their team's carbon footprint. So there was a blend of cooperation with your own teammates, but also a competition. And that blend turned out to be quite appealing to a number of people. We had 13 teams go through the original Taming Bigfoot competition. So it was almost 100 people. The teams were 7 people each. And we insisted that the teams be a diverse mix of people in the county. So you had to have somebody who lived inside Port Townsend, but you also had to have somebody who lived outside of Port Townsend, for whom transportation is a bigger issue. You had to have somebody who was living a green lifestyle. You had to have somebody who was not living a green lifestyle, but wanted to. So they were there to learn from the others how to reduce their carbon footprint. So there was a lot of discussion within each team as to how they would put their strategy together to reduce the team's carbon footprint, to help each other carpool, whatever they chose to do.
Were the teams self-selecting, or did you just take a pool of applicants and say, all right, we're putting these people together and those people together? I mean, how did the teams get composed?
We gave people options, people who knew each other and satisfied all these different criteria to give a diverse team. They could apply as an entire team, and most people did do it that way. But there were other individuals who didn't know enough people with the right required characteristics that they could apply as an individual, or a couple of people could apply. And then the organizers put them together with other individuals to make up teams.
And then those teams met sometime, and there was, as I recall, you used a calculator that you had created for them to calculate their baseline footprint, right?
Yeah, that's right. So the teams would get together and they would figure out how they wanted to approach reducing their carbon footprint the most. And so that led to some very illuminating discussions. and different teams could come up with different strategies. And I was a bit amused that when we had our kickoff meeting and all the teams came together and as one large group and they introduced themselves to their competitors, a lot of people were expecting us to give them the answers, how they would reduce their carbon footprint. And we said, no, that's not how it's going to work. You have to figure out what approach works best for you. And in that was a really important message that that how an individual will choose to reduce their carbon footprint is a very individual set of decisions that they have to make. And one strategy that works for one person may not work so well for the other. But the primary tool for them to use was this carbon footprint calculator. And there are various calculators available out on the web. But what we did was put one together where these conversion factors, where you convert how much electricity you use, how much propane you use, convert that to greenhouse gas emissions in terms of pounds of carbon dioxide equivalent. Those conversion factors were customized for Jefferson County. So they weren't national average figures. They were specifically appropriate for Jefferson County. And we were able to use the energy inventory that had been put together not long before this to come up with those conversion factors. So that was the tool people would use, and they could play with it. It was an Excel spreadsheet back in those days. And now it's a more modern mobile app as well as a website. But they could just put in numbers and see where they could have the greatest impact, what changes they could make that would have the greatest impact on their personal carbon footprint. So that was the tool that they had to use, and they had to come up with their own strategies. So that was part of the education process, really personalize this and make it your carbon footprint and Jefferson County specific conversion factors. And after the competition, we received a lot of feedback from people that really made it far more meaningful for people. And so we were really glad to hear that. And now that we have a new energy inventory, we're going to be updating those conversion factors. So we'll keep it customized for Jefferson County.
Well, I think it'd be interesting to know, what kinds of strategies people came up with that first time around, or what were really the most effective strategies and who won and why?
Yeah, it was quite interesting, the difference in the approaches. One thing we learned was that for every single team, the transportation was the largest part of their carbon footprint. We had home energy and transportation and food and shopping as the separate sectors, the three different sectors. But transportation was always the largest. So that received a lot of attention by a lot of the teams. Carpooling, lumping trips together into a single trip to do multiple errands, taking the bus and not driving to work were some of the strategies. Somebody actually bought a hybrid car during the period of the competition. Somebody had converted their home from propane heat to electric heat, and they saw a massive change in their reduction of their carbon footprint. So there were various approaches. We also had a prize, actually, for the lowest carbon footprint, although we emphasized reducing your carbon footprint. So we had a month of the competition at the beginning where people were encouraged not to change their behaviors so we could get a good baseline, a good reference. And then we had a two-month period where they tried to reduce their carbon footprint relative to that baseline. But at the same time, we did give an award for the lowest absolute carbon footprint. And that was given to a woman who lived in an apartment in Port Townsend, worked in Port Townsend, and commuted to her job with a bicycle. So that was hard to beat. But there were some others in similar situations. So it actually was a pretty tight race to get the lowest carbon footprint entirely. But we were actually at least as gratified by the teams that had started with a higher carbon footprint and were able to reduce that carbon footprint quite a bit. Most of the prizes were for greatest reduction overall, greatest reduction in home energy, greatest reduction in transportation, both in terms of absolute reduction for those teams that had a large starting footprint, they sort of had a bit of an advantage. For those teams that had a low starting footprint, we actually had prizes for the greatest fractional decrease in carbon footprint. So we gave a lot of prizes. We wanted everybody to feel good about this and you know, sort of get something in terms of a prize after the competition was over. But it also was gratifying to the organizers that people enjoyed it, not so much for the prizes that were awarded, but really for what they learned and the pleasure they had in doing it. It wasn't an onerous task that they felt they were being shouldered with, but they enjoyed it. And we tried to keep sort of that lighthearted and positive energy going throughout the competition. And
another part of it that I was really interested in was the impact of other things, not just your direct sort of fossil fuel use through transportation or home heating or whatever, but through your diet and through your other sort of, you know, like consumption. I mean, there were, as I recall, elements of the calculator that focused on those factors.
Yeah, so a lot of people are very well aware of how they heat their home and how much they drive are big parts of their carbon footprint. Food and shopping was that third sector, and we tried very hard to capture some of the aspects of a person's decision on what food they buy and how much food they consume and what type of food they consume, as well as what they buy in non-food items. Are important elements of the carbon footprint. It's much harder to quantify those, but we tried very hard to include some aspects of that so we could capture the impact that those decisions have on one's carbon footprint. And we've actually improved those categories in the latest version of the calculator.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the upcoming competition and if people are interested in participating, how they get hold of you and what the schedule is going to be.
Yeah, I'll fill in the gap too. I mean, one of the things that surprised us the most was that after we were done with the competition, yes, people in Jefferson County really enjoyed it. That was good. We did get a number of requests from people who missed out on the competition, heard about the competition and wanted us to do it again. At the same time, we heard from people outside of Jefferson County that they were quite enthralled with this activity. And so in the intervening years, there have been Taming Bigfoot competitions in Edmonds and in Seattle and Whidbey Island. And they've all had similar positive experiences with their communities. And they each, you know, tweaked it a little bit from what we did in Jefferson County. That was 5 years ago. And now we feel that there is a lot of benefit to running Taming Bigfoot again. So we're saying that Bigfoot is back. And this is 5 years on. So this is Taming Bigfoot 2021 now. 2016 was the first one here. And we want to attract new participants. We also want to attract previous participants. And the reason for that is that, as everybody knows, we're still in the throes of this pandemic. And people are staying home far more. And we know that from the first competition, transportation was such a large component of people's individual carbon footprints. So we are very interested in having previous participants join in this competition because we know what their carbon footprint was with this calculator back 5 years ago. And quantifying that, actually measuring that, would be very interesting to us. But we also want to attract new participants. And we've heard through our networks that there are lots of people out there who have heard about Bigfoot and want to participate in this competition. So we're anticipating a very vibrant mix of previous participants and new participants, some new teams. We've changed the characteristics for the teams. We're not quite as restrictive. We have more different types of characteristics. Things like, are you retired? Do you work inside the home? Do you telework from home or do you have to commute? So we want to kind of label the participants with some of those characteristics so then we can slice and dice the data that come back and look at how carbon footprint changes from type of person to type of person. People who telework, I would assume, are going to have a lower carbon footprint than those who have to commute. But we'll be able to measure those things, quantify those with a calculator. That intrigues us. We will take advantage of the new ways of entering data. 5 years ago, we had an Excel spreadsheet. Now we have a mobile app, and it's available on the Google Play Store and the Apple Store. We also have a website. All those different tools feed into the same database. So it's much easier for an individual to enter their data. And I'll be downloading the data and doing the analysis that I did 5 years ago. I think it'll be hopefully easier for me, but we'll see about that. And we also want to include some additional information for the people who are participating. So we'll offer some presentations on the new energy inventory that has recently been completed for the county, because there are some changes from the previous one 5 or 6 years ago. And we'll also talk about what the county is doing in terms of trying to reduce its overall carbon footprint.
Well, everything you just said is raising all kinds of questions for me. I mean, first of all, about this mobile app, I mean, that's kind of exciting news. I mean, I assume that is something that people would be able to use anytime. I mean, you wouldn't need to be part of the Taming Bigfoot contest to be using that and have it be useful in your life. And then I'm just wondering whether that's happening, whether, you know, a growing number of people are actually using a phone app to measure their carbon footprints. And how the data that's being collected, I mean, whether that data is being collected somewhere centrally and thereby gaining a overview of people's energy consumption.
Yeah, the mobile app, it was a fascinating spinoff, totally unanticipated. But in one of the presentations I gave, and I talked about the Excel spreadsheet, somebody came up to me afterwards and said, "Have you thought about a mobile app?" And I said, "No, I hadn't, but I'm starting to now." And it became a reality. We found somebody who writes software for mobile apps, and he donated his time, along with his partner who donated her time to produce the website. As I said, the two work together, but you can use just one or just the other. And this mobile app is something I use every day. So anybody can download it and use it. Their data is not shared with anyone else. So they use it for their personal purposes. As I said, I use it every evening. I put in my activity. If I had some beef for dinner or if I bought some food or if I drove somewhere, I'll put that in. And it allows you to track your own carbon footprint over time. And it has various additional features that allow you to look at the previous 30 days with the 30 days prior to that, or choose any time frame you want. So you can do your own exploration of your data, and it will store those data. But
it will not compare you to others or give you some sort of sense of where you fit in the population of users of the app.
It doesn't. It's very cognizant of people's privacy. So it has your personal information. It has is your email. You use that to register. Right. You set up your own password. But your data are firewalled from anybody else. Nobody else can look at your data. The only exception to that is that if you are part of a competition, then your data can be seen by other people on your team. But only summary information, how much in home energy, doesn't know whether it's from electricity or propane, but they can see your sector by sector information, and people in competing teams can see your team's footprint, but not the data for individual members of a competing team. So we've been very careful with putting up these privacy firewalls so that your data isn't accessible by others. If you want to share your data, you can download your data and share it with somebody else. But
I was thinking more along the lines of, it seems like there's a lot of potential for this to sort of do citizen science, if it were. And I was thinking about the eBird application out of Cornell, for example, where it wouldn't be visible to anybody, you know, like that I was the one who saw the great blue heron, you know, like at this location, but that a great blue heron was seen at this location. So in the same way, you know, it seems like you could consolidate data without anybody's privacy being impinged upon by, or where you could just say, well, you know, like the average user of this app is using so much fossil fuel annually or whatever. And that wouldn't identify who the users were.
Yeah, yeah. We haven't taken that step yet. I mean, the data are still there. Any user has the option to remove their email from the system. I mean, we still have their data, but there's no association of those data with that person. But we haven't used the database in that kind of exploratory way. But that potential still is there. We had intended it to be primarily for competitions, but we're kind of sitting back and seeing how other people may use it outside of these competitions.
So before the interview began, you and I were talking a little bit also about another like aspect of people's carbon footprint, and that is, you know, like the ways in which people may be engaged in offsetting their footprint. And I was telling you about a thing that I've been involved with, which is the Olympic Carbon Fund, which is primarily so far, it's an effort actually to get people to, you know, sequester carbon. And it, that takes advantage of an opportunity we have locally in the form of the PT paper mill, which churns out as a byproduct a fair amount of charcoal or biochar. The Olympic Carbon Fund, which is a fund of the Jefferson Community Foundation, has helped subsidize people to put that into their gardens where it becomes recalcitrant sequestering carbon for long periods of time, I mean, for thousands of years, and at the same time contributes to making the soils themselves, replenishing the soils and making them into ongoing carbon sinks. And so you were saying that there's a consideration of a sort of side competition about offsets, and maybe you could talk a little about that.
Yeah, another additional feature of this Taming Bigfoot 2021 is to expand sort of people's awareness of the climate change issue, the greenhouse gas emission issue, and expand it to not just consider how they can reduce their own emissions, but how they can more proactively sequester carbon. And so this sort of gets into the whole aspect of carbon credits and carbon sequestration. And there are a number of different activities that we want to shine a spotlight on for people to consider to be more active in carbon sequestration. I mean, the simplest way is to plant a tree. But there are more ambitious approaches, and the biochar project that you spoke to is certainly one of them, and one that is we're ideally placed here because we have an opportunity here that many other locations don't have with the paper mill use of production of biochar, and a lot of focus on gardening. I mean, an awful lot of our participants are avid gardeners. So we want to, as I said, illuminate that opportunity as one of a whole set of different activities that individuals can consider to sequester carbon. So that really is the whole flip side of this, reducing your carbon footprint is increasing your sequestration of carbon. Right. And they are two very separate types of approaches to addressing the same problem. And so we don't want to focus on just one side, but we want to really emphasize that there are both approaches.
So we're basically out of time here, but how can people get involved in this? And you know, when does the contest begin, and how do people sign up if they want to?
Well, I'll start by talking about the original competition ran from mid-January through Earth Day in mid-April. This competition is going to be a similar time frame. We're collecting applications in January, up to January 22nd. That last week in January, we'll be formulating the teams. And the competition will start February 1st. And that first month of February will be this baseline period where people are collecting their data but not changing their behaviors. And then the following 2 months, March and April, are going to be the reduction phase where they will be trying whatever approaches they choose to reduce their carbon footprint in March and April and entering their data during that period. And then we'll have the awards in early May. So applications are being received now, and you can get the application. You can find it on the Local 2020 website. You can go to local2020.org and go to Climate Action, and there you'll find a link to the Bigfoot competition, and the application is available there, along with some other information about how we intend to run the competition, even the documentation, how we arrived at the conversion factors that we have. Or you can just Google search on Taming Bigfoot. You'll see a number of different websites from some of the previous competitions in Edmonds, and you'll find the main website to enter your data there. But if you want to get the application, and I hope you do, go to the Local 2020 website. That's the path to get there.
Great. And to get just to put the app on your phone, is that link also there, or do you go to the App Store for Apple? I mean, how do you get the Taming Bigfoot app for your phone?
If you're interested in the Taming Bigfoot mobile app to use it for your own purposes or just want to take a look at it, you can go to either of the app stores and search on Taming Bigfoot or Bigfoot. You'll find it quickly that way. And we also have YouTube videos that I've made it now to show you how to use the website to enter data and to use the mobile app to enter and use data and visualize it and explore your own data.
With Taming Bigfoot contest founder and designer Bob Binchadler, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon and repeats on Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans. We'll be right back.